All right. So I'm going to call this talk, and I kind of wish I had been able to ha had gotten it together in time to put in a newsletter to entice people to come, but it'll be recorded and they can listen. I'm calling it Bad Zazen. Bad Zazen, what is it? What do we do about it? So I thought I would begin to frame the conversation with sharing with you the instructions for Zazen, seated meditation in the Zen school from the Soto Shu website. So the Soto or the Soto School of Buddhism, Shu is Japanese for school. And the Soto Shu is the Japanese Soto school. It's unlike in the West here. It's a very organized denomination. So on their website, which is, made for non-Japanese speakers, right? Because they want to have it be accessible. So they have it in English. How to do Zazen. They have a how to do Zazen page. So I won't read it all, but I want to give you a sense. So how to do Zazen. And they have lovely pictures as well. The place. When you do Zazen, find a quiet place where you can sit without disturbances. It should be neither too dark nor too bright, warm in the winter and cool in the summer. The sitting place should be neat and clean. If possible, a statue of Manjushri Bodhisattva should be enshrined in the room. If there is none available, any statue or painting of a Buddha or Bodhisattva is fine. Also, when possible, place an offering of flowers on the altar and burn incense. Preparing yourself. Avoid sitting when you haven't had sufficient sleep or when you are physically exhausted. Before sitting, eat moderately and avoid alcohol. Wash your face and feet so you feel refreshed. Clothing. Avoid wearing soiled clothing or garments which are luxurious or expensive. It is also advisable to avoid heavy garments. Wear your clothing loosely but neatly. In Japanese Zen monasteries, socks are not worn in the zendo. Position of the zafu, round cushion we sit on, some of us sit on. Place a thick square mat or zabuton in front of the wall and put a zafu on it. Sit down, placing the base of your spine at the center of the zafu, so that half of the zafu is behind you. After crossing your legs, rest your knees firmly on the zabuton. And then there's several paragraphs on crossing your legs, various ways that you can cross your legs. Posture, rest both knees firmly on the zabuton, straighten the lower part of your back and your spine. Pull in your chin, and extend your neck as though reaching toward the ceiling. Your ears should be in a line parallel to your shoulders, and your nose should be in line with your navel. After straightening your back, relax your shoulders, back, and abdomen without changing your posture. Sit upright, leaning neither to the left nor right, neither forward nor backward. The cosmic mudra. Place your right hand palm up on your left foot, then your left hand palm up on your right palm. Tips of your thumbs should be lightly touching each other. This is called cosmic mudra. Place the tips of your thumbs in front of your navel and your arms slightly apart from your body. The mouth. Keep your mouth closed, placing your tongue against the roof of your mouth just behind your teeth. The eyes. Keep your eyes slightly open. Cast them downward at about a 45-degree angle. Without focusing on any particular thing, let everything have its place in your field of vision. If your eyes are closed, you will easily drift into drowsiness or daydreaming. Exhale completely and take a breath. Quietly make a deep exhalation and inhalation. Slightly open your mouth. And exhale slowly and smoothly. In order to expel all the air from your lungs, exhale from the abdomen. Then close your mouth and continue to breathe through your nose naturally. swaying the body. Place your hands palm up on your knees and sway the upper half of your body from left to right a few times. Without moving your hips, move the trunk as if it were a pole, leaning to one side, then to the other, so that the waist and hip muscles are stretched. You may also sway forward and backward. At first, this movement should be large, gradually becoming smaller and smaller, and ceasing with your body centered in an upright position. Once again, forming the cosmic mudra with your hands, assume an unmoving upright posture. Abdominal breathing. During Zazen, breathe quietly through your nose. Do not try to control your breathing. Let it come and go so naturally you forget you are breathing. Let long breaths be long and short breaths be short. Do not make noise by breathing heavily. Awareness. Do not concentrate on any particular object or control your thought. When you maintain a proper posture and your breathing settles down, your mind will naturally become tranquil. When various thoughts arise in your mind, do not be caught up by them or struggle with them. Neither pursue nor try to escape from them. Just leave thoughts alone, allowing them to come up and go away freely. The essential thing in doing Zazen is to awaken from distraction and dullness and return to the right posture moment by moment. Getting up from Zazen. When you finish Zazen, bow in Gassho, place your hands palm up on your thighs, sway your body a few times, first a little, then more extensively. Take a deep breath, unfold your legs, move slowly, especially when your legs are asleep. Do not stand up abruptly. So that description is 869 words long. And 89% of those words have to do with the body. The setting, the preparation, the posture, the breath. 11% of those words have to do with the mind. So you can take from this the message that Zazen is 90% done with the body. So it sounds pretty simple, but any of us who have done it know that strangely it's not. It is and it's not. So we're also told, and I mean, there's many, many writings about Zazen and we recite them all the time. So Zen Master Keizan says, don't be concerned about how well or poorly you think you are doing. I mean, we can understand that if we're like, the idea is to let thoughts come and go, then, dwelling on and evaluating our meditation is not helpful. Dogen says, have no designs on becoming a Buddha, right? So you're not sitting there like, okay, there's some agenda, like some result to achieve. I have a Zen teacher friend who studied in Japan many, many years. His Japanese teacher would say, in Zazen, your job is to warm your cushion. And my own instructions for Zazen, I say, do not struggle against forgetfulness. The instant you awaken, be grateful and throw away past and future. And yet, we still have a sense sometimes, right, that our Zazen just misses the mark. Or at very least is like not as good as it is sometimes, or whatever, right? Like it's unavoidable that we have some sense of like not all Zazen is the same. And oh, like some Zazen, and then maybe in the middle of retreat or something is like spacious and still and quiet mind and everything seems luminous and and then sometimes we're just like just thinking about our plans and thoughts and worries the way we are when we're not on the cushion. So, like, So although Kazon says, don't be concerned about how well or how poorly you are doing, the next line in that teaching says, just understand that time is as precious as if you were putting out a fire on your head. And our rational mind is like, well, then we have to evaluate how well we're doing so that we can do that. And he gives very, elaborate instructions in this. We recite this on Tuesdays sometimes. If dullness or sleepiness overcome your sitting, move the body and open the eyes wider, or place attention above the hairline or between your eyebrows. If you're still not fresh, rub the eyes or the body. If that still doesn't wake you, now, so this is clearly like, I think this is advice. This isn't like what we do in the Zendo, right? Because you disturb people. But I'm thinking this is like, this is for late night sitting or when you're sitting on your own, right? If that still doesn't work, wake you, get up and do walking meditation. And if that doesn't work, wash your eyes and forehead with cold water or chant the three pure precepts of the Bodhisattvas. Do something, don't just fall asleep. You should be aware of the great matter of birth and death and the swiftness of impermanence. What are you doing sleeping when your eye of the way is still clouded? If dullness and sinking arise repeatedly, you should chant. Habituality is deeply rooted, and so I am wrapped in dullness. When will dullness disperse? May the compassion of the Buddhas and patriarchs lift this darkness and misery. And then, if the mind wanders, he says, place attention at the tip of the nose and the tandem, deep in the abdomen, the hara, and count the inhalations and exhalations. And if that doesn't stop the scattering, bring up a phrase and keep it in awareness. What is it that comes thus? Or when no thought arises, where is affliction? Mount Sumeru. He says, sayings like this you can't draw any flavor out of are suitable. Right? Like just sayings that you can't really even think about because I don't really even make any sense. And then if scattering continues, sit and look to that point where the breath ends and the eyes close forever, and where the child is not yet conceived, where not a single concept can be produced. When a sense of the twofold emptiness of self and things appears, scattering will surely rest. In another one of our Tuesday chants, Faith and Mind, Master Sengsan says, merely stagnating in duality, how can you recognize oneness? And bound by thoughts, you depart from the real. Well, we know that, right? And sinking into a stupor is as bad. And Hungjir, if illumination neglects serenity, then aggressiveness appears. So if we're looking for some kind of experience or realization, then it, our meditation ends up having this attitude of kind of striving and aggressiveness. But if serenity neglects illumination, murkiness leads to wasted dharma. So for just sitting there and not having a sense of something greater, some kind of aspiration, murkiness leads to wasted dharma. So what is bad zazen? Or even not so good zazen? There's those very, very simple instructions given on the Soto Shu website, just in a way, like let's just return to the basics. When various thoughts arise in your mind, do not become caught up with them or struggle with them. So I thought I would, before I go on to the rest of this, just take a little time here to invite a few people to speak to. Let's just like set aside all the like, we're not supposed to judge our zazen. No gaining idea, all of that, and like on just honestly what we think of as like bad zazen, like what is bad, what do we despite ourselves feel is bad zazen? Anybody willing to? Yoli, and then Jessica.
I'm hard on myself for a lot of things, but not Zazen. I have no expectations. Like for me, if I was to say bad Zazen is where I'm constantly checking my watch and thinking, why aren't they ringing that bell? But like for today, for instance, it was very productive. I went to California to find a job and I couldn't find any job. So I rewrote my entire cover letter. Shouldn't have done it, but I haven't been quiet enough to do that anywhere else. So anyway, so I thought that was a very productive good song. Anyways, that's all I have to say.
Jessica and then Ruthann.
So for me, bad Zazen is when I get so caught up in thoughts that I'm just not there the whole sitting period, which doesn't happen that often, but it actually happened today. And then I end up feeling like you are the worst practitioner in the whole Sangha, which is, just that's just more. So for me, that's bad Zazen. It happens.
Yeah, Ruth Ann, did you have something?
Before I decided to practice Buddhism, I had done some body work over the years with different systems for generally, I guess, health reasons. And I remember this person who came from an Eastern point of view, and he said, if suddenly you're thinking about what will I do when I'm finished, you're not being present. You're not doing what you intend to do. And I know my body lets me know when my mind has gone travel around, when my fingertips aren't lightly touching my thumbs. And but when I feel, oh, I want to do this forever, very timeless, then I think, oh, that's delicious. And whatever I did in this sitting at this time is okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, in that, in a way, I could ask the other question, like, but I'm going to be getting to that, right? Like, what is good Zazen, right? In contrast, because you, in a way, like bad Zazen could just be kind of an absence of the kind of energy or presence that good Zazen feels like. Yeah, my bad Zazen it just feels forgetful, right? It's like, and good Zazen feels like remembering, like, oh, right. Oh yeah, reality. Oh. Jill.
I feel like my bad Zazen is very like about planning. So kind of like what Yoli said, I'm waiting for the timer, but I've also got like a long list of the things, and then I'm reorganizing the list of the things, and I'm thinking about how I could make the list even better. And so it gets this, I'm not present because I'm just like in the future totally.
Hi. For me, I actually have different levels of bad zazen. Ranking from worst to best, bad zazen. And for me, the worst zazen is the where I catch myself just mired in something completely stupid. I'm like you've given the example of a plot of a TV show, or I'm ruminating on some ridiculously unimportant thing. And better bad zazen is like the zazen where I'm like I'm planning, or I'm okay, at least I'm thinking, or I'm writing a cover letter. At least I'm thinking, I'm doing something productive. I'm wasting my time, but at least I'm doing something. No, I'm not judging you at all. So like there's that hierarchy of even the bad zazen. So but it's always about that moment of catching myself like, what the hell am I doing? Come on, and then trying to come back. So
Well, thank you. So I would say that for one reason or another, in bad Zazen, we are not giving ourselves over to shikantaza completely. For one reason or another, we're not actually engaging the practice completely, or even very much sometimes, right? And I think we should think about this as a choice we are making or not making, rather than a matter of a lack of self-discipline or skill. I think these are just different lenses we can use to look at the same issues. But I think it's much more empowering to think of it as choice, a choice that we are making. Like, when I just sit there and I plan my garden, I'm choosing to do that instead of sit zazen, because there's a little part of me that's just like, zazen's boring. Yeah, I saw it. There was some really luminous moments, but I'll experience them again sometime, you know. So I'm not choosing to do it. But the drawback of that idea of like choice is also it's a delusion that that we have an executive eye who is in control and just can, I'm going to decide from now on, I'm going to choose shikantaza. Like, life just doesn't work that way, right? How simple it would be if we could just be like, I'm just not going to indulge in that addiction ever again. I'm just never going to get angry again. Like, that's just so. But we do have choice in this moment. It's the only thing that's real, and the only place we have any choice. And maybe we don't have like all the choices. Maybe our choices are kind of constrained by our karma, but we have choice in this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. But we can affect our being, our life over time. And this is where like vow and intention and aspiration come in, right? This is a direction I want to go, and therefore I'm going to try to make these kinds of choices. But it's always just going to be this incremental thing, right? I'm going to make this choice at this moment, and hopefully over time. This is where Dogen says, to study Buddhism is to study the self, and that study is really a word that means like to learn, to become familiar with. So over time, we then have learned the self. We learn how this being, this body mind works. Slowly but surely, we discover, we kind of let go of thoughts, or we shift our mind, or make different choices to allow ourselves to be in that space of zazen. And then we practice making those choices over and over, right, to kind of build new habits. And then hopefully over time, slowly but surely, we kind of remember more often, wake up more often. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we call it a perfectionist or an extremist, or I don't know, black and white thinking or something. But when I was told, okay, mindfulness means to be aware each moment, I'm like, let's do this, you know? And I'm like, and I was so amazed and frustrated at, like, despite my, such a sincere intention, I still only remembered to do that every, like, I don't know, like a few minutes out of every hour. And I'm like, well, how does this even work? But, we can't do it by sheer force of will, but over time, I think we remember to pay attention more often. And as we become more familiar with true shikantaza, which I would argue for most of us happens in the space of retreat, silent retreat, our bodhicitta is strengthened. So our will to enlightenment, our mind that seeks the way, our inexplicable desire to move toward the truth, because we have tasted just, oh, that's that's how we can be. So we're a little more inspired to give ourselves over to that process. So we must not, in Soto Zen, become slack and complacent, thinking that just sitting means to sit like a sack of potatoes and allow habit energy or dullness to overcome us. And I mean, we all do this to some extent. It is the drawback to this kind of practice. I think this kind of practice is really profound and encourages non-dualism from the beginning, right? We're not fighting ourselves. We're not, establishing like I'm gonna control my mind. Like we're not fixated on a result. We're really, it's a non-dual approach from the beginning. It's beautiful. But a drawback is that we go, not supposed to judge your zazen. Just let it be what it is. And there it is. And then we go kind of slack and complacent, and our zazen is, I don't know, not, we're not fully engaged in the process. We should keep in mind the mystery and power of zazen. Keep opening up to it, exploring it, giving ourselves to it. I had a conversation with some of my fellow Zen teachers the other day, and we were talking about koans versus shikantaza and how I asked, I mean, I have my own sense of it, but I wanted to ask these other Soto Zen teachers, how do you encourage people to work on insight if their primary practice is shikantaza? And Daigaku, this guy who trained so much in Japan, he said, his teacher said that if you are really, if you sit true shikantaza, you can pass every koan. So what it, what is true shikantaza? It's just sitting, but the way the Japanese is phrased is really nothing but precisely sitting. Absolutely nothing else except for sitting. And yet that sounds so boring, right? Because, but when I'm sitting good zazen, I realize nothing is boring. Nothing, every single moment is precious and nothing is boring. So Keizan says, zazen means to clarify the mind ground and dwell comfortably in your actual nature. Zazen is entering directly into the ocean of Buddha nature and manifesting the body of the Buddha. The pure and clear mind is actualized in the present moment. The original light shines everywhere. Zazen alone brings everything to rest and flowing freely reaches everywhere. So zazen is like returning home and sitting in peace. You'll recognize these words from Dogen if you ever come to recite Fugan Zazengi. The zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease. The practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. And a little poem that I wrote. The buzz of my karma rarely subsides, but when it does, the luminous intimacy of this moment outshines every worldly concern. So it's pointless and not helpful to beat ourselves up, right? Like our zazen's not like this. The instant you awaken, be grateful and throw away past and future. Our zazen is our koan. this very thing that we are trying to do, which is so simple and yet so elusive, is a mystery to explore. And the that is why, like, so I feel like it's a very, over time, we learn more about what is actually involved. Doesn't necessarily mean we can actually do it all that often. I think of this as a Zen teacher I really love and admire would teach people about Zazen by having them work on a slack line. So you know those like a it's a line suspended between two trees or whatever, and it's not even a tightrope, right? It's actually slack, so it's even harder. And then you know people get up and they walk on that line, and like if you do that, you will quickly realize like kind of using this you know discriminating mind to try to stay upright is not going to work. So you have to kind of drop that and go into a different way of being that kind of trusts the body, trusts something, and then it's actually you know becomes possible. But then of course you're going to be like you know, and then you fall off. So like in a way, our Zazen is like practicing that, right? And we're not always going to be like walking on the line, but it's all part of the process is exploring like what is this and how do I let go and how do I trust this process and all that. So you know, mis bad Zazen could be a big part of that process, and it. You know, the ancestors fortunately fully admit and prepare us for the fact that this is not, you know, there wouldn't be so many teachings on Zazen if it really was that easy. So here's from something that we recite from Keizan. He says, Zazen is not based on teaching, practice, or realization. Instead, these three aspects are all contained within it. So measuring realization is based on some notion of enlightenment. This is not the essence of Zazen. We're trying to move toward, you know, achieve something, then we miss it. And that's not it. Practice is based on strenuous application. This is not the essence of Zazen. Do that, I'm gonna concentrate, I'm gonna give myself to Zazen now. Like, that's not the essence of Zazen. Teaching is based on freeing from evil and cultivating good. This is, you know, all of Buddhism. This is, you know, we're doing this in order to become better people, in order to awaken, in order to liberate ourselves, in order to be bodhisattvas. But this is not the essence of Zazen. So he says, teaching is found in Zen, but it's not the usual teaching. Rather, it is direct pointing, just expressing the way, speaking with the whole body. Such words are without sentences or clauses. Where views end and concept is exhausted, the one word pervades the 10 directions without setting up so much as a single hair. And then Dogen begins Fukan Zazenge by saying, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? There's nothing to gain, so why isn't it all just cool in a way? And why do we practice and how should our practice be? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What need is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. And yet, if there is a hair's breadth deviation, it is like the gap between heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Seems like it's right there, right? It's and when we experience good Zazen, you know, we get a sense of that. You know, it's easy for it to just feel like it's way up here, there's heaven, and here we are. Down here on Earth. So, In summary, just a little, I could picture people after being like, yeah, I like that talk. I can't really remember what it was about. So I'm going to revisit some points. Zazen is not a slack state devoid of aspiration and effort. Our Zazen requires us to let go of all striving toward a result, and yet it asks us to show up in a way that requires a lifetime of diligent effort to master. The complete surrender to Zazen is not easy, and that's the point. The effort to completely surrender to Zazen is our effort to realize our true nature and awaken to reality. Zazen is not a means to an end, it's the end itself. We are sitting there practicing being enlightened. So it's hard, like, because we're not fully enlightened, right? So of course it is hard. It takes time and diligence to learn to make the kind of effort that's required. And most of the time we miss the mark. Try too hard, don't try enough. But when we manage to do it, even for a moment, it fuels our bodhicitta, that determination to practice. I mean, sometimes, like it's one thing to, okay, I shouldn't judge my zazen, but if I'm doing like what people said and I'm just like wrapped up in my plans, or even worse, wrapped up in serious, like contemplating an intriguing TV show. Like, I wonder what that robot's gonna do now. Like, oh my God, no. Like, and so there feels like there should be a little, when I recognize that, there should be a little bit of like, okay, come on now, right? It's like, but how can we do that in kind of a gentle and kind of compassionate, sincere way, and not divide ourselves against ourselves, but really check in with like, all right, what do we really care about here? Because Keizan says, if you dwell in this samadhi, the samadhi is good zazen, right? Samadhi is a non-dual state of awareness where you're not even of a sense like, I am being aware of sound. There's just sound. It's just our experience. If you dwell in the samadhi for even a short time, the mind ground will be directly clarified. You should know that this is the true gate of the Buddha way. So, there. Comments, questions, thoughts? James.
I mean to monopolize the chair, but I really appreciate the word practice, and I'm really glad that you said that just a minute ago, because practicing enlightenment, practicing being enlightened, and it's been he very helpful to me to, because I'm a musician, to kind of equate it to a degree. It's not a perfect parallel in any sense, but like when I would practice my trumpet, right? I'm practicing playing this piece of music, and I'm trying to play it exactly as I would play it at the concert. So I'm kind of pretending that I'm playing it at the show, right? And I'm trying to play it like I would want to play it at the show. And then I mess up. Okay, now I gotta go back and I gotta try again. And like that constant checking and bringing back and checking and bringing back and checking and coming back is kind of like, to me, that there's a parallel there with my zazen. Like, oh, you're slouching, or you got distracted for a second. Come back to the breath, come back to the breath. And like, if I was like, well, screw it, it doesn't matter if I screw up on the show, I'm gonna, like play a game on my phone. That would be the equivalent of the distraction. I don't know. That's where the metaphor kind of breaks down a little bit. But just that, like thinking about it as a, it, like you said, it is the end. It's not the means to the end, it is the end. And so like, if I can do that with my trumpet, I can sit there and I can play a line and envision, like I'm trying to play this as perfectly as possible and use the right breath support, use the right fingerings or whatever, as if I'm actually playing the show, like then I'm, that's kind of the equivalent to sitting zazen and practicing enlightenment at the same time. So that trying to equate those two parts of my mind has been
Well, and
somewhat
I
subtle.
like the comparison too, where if you could be like it, the kind of the equivalent of saying like, you know, we already have everything we need, we already have Buddha nature, it's all good, would just be like, I'll just play whatever happens when I get to the show, you know? And like it would be happy, right? It would not, yeah, it'd be what it was, but it wouldn't be the beautiful thing that we know is possible. So that's where I feel like that kind of motivation. Like, no, we don't have to do it. We don't have to do it. We want to do it because it creates something beautiful.
That's kind of taken the pressure off too, because if I feel like, you know, I don't expect that I'm going to be doing it perfectly when I'm sitting in my little studio and I'm practicing lines for a show. It's like, I know I'm going to screw up. That's why I'm doing this. Like to keep that, take that energy to my zazen and say, you know, I'm going to probably get distracted. I'm going to slouch. I'm going to forget, whatever. And it's going to be okay. I just have to bring myself back. You know, taking that pressure off keeps me from beating myself up when I do catch myself.
And I can, you know, you're thinking about the, you know, and thinking about the show. It doesn't always work, but sometimes I like think about like this is the last day I'm alive. I mean, what, how would I want to be? How would I want to be if this was my last day? And that, I mean, that doesn't always convince my mind, right? It's like, Cal.
A question relating back to one of your podcast episodes, which I know must like haunt you slightly with how many you actually have and everything that's been said once or before. But while we've been speaking of this, I thought back to one where you were, I think you were quoting Uchiyama Roshi, and it was a rather technical thing he was describing, but it was about Zed and Zed prime. He used this term. It was quite complicated, but I mean, as what I understood of it, I might be wrong, but it was as if he was defining in a way good zazen as actually the returning back to the state of just sitting. So it seemed like actually the deviation away and then the coming back itself was good zazen in itself, if you know what I mean. I wondered, firstly, whether you think I've got that wrong or mistaken, but secondly, what about that though as a kind of an element? Does that have some sort of input into things?
I think that I still love that image, which I will explain in a moment, but I think it's kind of like there's different ways to slice the Dharma tomato. So like it's kind of like, yeah, you could slice it that way too. You know, today I sliced it like this, but you could also take this Uchiyama Roshi and slice it like this. So he's a very he's not alive anymore, but a Japanese priest, and he wrote a few books. And just a quirky, creative guy, and he's a big fan of Shikataza, just sitting. So, and he loves diagrams. So he had this, he said, if here's a timeline and here's a little sitter, okay, kind of beginning and end. And then like, this is the Z, I think that's like the Z line, and then Z, you know, and then that what they're sitting there, but then your mind drifts away from that timeline, right? Woo, past or future. And then, but then you realize it and you return. You realize it and return. So there's like the Zen prime. I might be getting a little bit wrong, but the Zen prime line is like departure from reality in a way in our minds. And so he said, if we think that Zazen is about somehow we're just going to be like right on Zed, the entire, like he said, that would be like being a rock, like you wouldn't be alive. That's not the nature of life. Like we will always be departing, but he said it's the return that is the practice. So that's another way I think of framing it, where the return is not a failure, right? And that's like, if you kind of judge like bad and even worse zazen, like it can be a little frustrating when your mind was wandering, and over the course of a 30-minute period, you realize it and you return to sitting 30 times, right? That's annoying. But that's a lot better than after the bell rings and you realize the entire time you were just caught up, right? So it would have more returns. Jessica.
So here's a question that is, I think, certainly it relates to me, and I think others in the Sangha as well. So one of the instructions that you read at the very beginning said, don't sit if you're tired, if you're sleepy.
Yeah.
And like, I would hardly ever sit because of my insomnia issues. So I don't let that stop me. But the quality of practice is definitely affected. Like when I'm really sleep deprived, it's not great. I have a hard time maintaining concentration. And yet I have to trust that if I just sit myself down on that meditation seat and just attempt anyway, that it matters. And so I know other people deal with that or significant health issues or pain. And I wonder if you have a comment.
Yeah. I guess I would say that, I mean, you can follow Kazan's advice about, don't sit when you're tired or drunk, probably have better zazen if you follow that, if you have the option of following that. I mean, it more, or I should say more enjoyable, right? Less fraught. But ultimately, I would say that the tiredness, health issues, having a busy mind like mine, being ADD, like some people just like their minds are just operate differently. They got thoughts just going through all the time. So the experience of zazen is very different. But at a deep level, I see none of that as any kind of obstacle. And here's why. So in the course of session, like it's very typical in Japanese monasteries that are the Japanese monasteries really focused on zazen and awakening and stuff. They encourage you to sit up late at night. And as you know, and they encourage, they love, they build up to like the last day of session, you're gonna sit up all night. And I mean, and people's like, in a sense, the quality of people's zazen just goes to hell, right? But there's a point at which it you recognize that the sleepiness, the wandering mind, the pain, whatever, is no obstacle to just being with what is. It just requires us to completely and utterly accept and be with what is. And when we're dealing with difficulties, whether that's a busy mind or pain or sleepiness, it's hard. We don't want to. This is not the experience I want to be having. But if we can just completely accept it, then it's perfect zazen. And so our obstacles can be our gateways, in a sense. And as I think I've said before, I didn't have insomnia problems, but if I don't get at least 8 or 9 hours of sleep a night, I fall asleep in zazen. And I mean, sometimes I do that anyway, even but I do get plenty of sleep. And that was immensely, immensely frustrating to me. In my junior years of practice, I wanted to practice so hard and I wanted to experience samadhi and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know, it's like when we have something like that, when we have a handicap of sorts, it really forces us to look at zazen more deeply and ask what it really is. as long as we have the ability to make, achieve cool samadhi states, and then we can equate that experience we're having with the point of the practice. But when we can't, when that eludes us, then we have to reach more deeply and realize, like, when we're surrendering to Zazen, it's not a like, I'm going to surrender if I can have this experience and that experience. Can I surrender to my life just as it is?
Sorry, I'm back. You keep bringing up stuff that I have, like, oh, is tangential to Jessica, but that what you were talking about with Sishin and the quality of the Zazen, like we, we did the session, and I actually sat less than a lot of people because I was in the kitchen for large parts of it, but it's a lot of hours, a lot of hours, and a lot of hours, and building up and building up, and then we got to that last night. And we were doing the yaza, and you were in there for a while. And it was like, and I think at one point it was just me and Coral and Greg and Mick, I think, were left. And I was just so broken down with the tiredness, And I was like, there was a moment when I went back to the dorm and I was like, am I really going to go back over there? I don't know. Maybe I just need to sleep, Tomorrow's going to be a long day. I should just sleep. And I went back anyway. But, if we're talking good and bad, I had the best Zazen in that period of time at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night after a whole session, because I was just in that state of, I can't, like, my mind can't fight it anymore. It's just, I've got to just relax into it. And I found myself, I mean, this is unusual for me, but I found myself sitting, and then with that, there being no bell, no timekeeping happening. By the time I looked at my watch again, it had been an hour and I hadn't moved for an hour. And then I got up and did Kinyin because my knees were like, all right, that's enough, buddy. You're done. But it was just so, and I was doing Kinyin and just in tears because it was just, it was such a powerful experience to finally feel like my mind had gotten to a state where I was like, okay, man, I'm not going to try to distract you anymore. I got nothing left. You're good. You could have your concentration. I'll leave you alone. But I appreciate you saying that because I definitely have that experience of just, but in that case, the exhaustion was almost an aid of sorts. But
Yeah, and the, in my struggles with sleepiness at times, there's a lot of things can feed into that. I always think about, like, what if this was my last day alive, right? Then I'd probably be awake. Maybe not if I had insomnia, I don't know, maybe not. But a couple times I have managed to just surrender completely. But like, it's like we can surrender completely and yet pay really, really close attention, right? It's not like resignation, like, oh, whatever. I mean, sometimes I do that too. If you're just really exhausted, just like, okay, fine. But I paid really close attention, like, and it was in retreat, so I had built up that ability to pay attention. And just like, where do I feel that? Is it in the eyes? Is it in the, throughout the body? Where? And I paid such close attention to it that it was like the sleepiness disappeared. I mean, if I had thought like, yay, I made the sleepiness disappear, then like it would come back, right? But it that's like such close engagement with it that it ceased to be a problem. So, I mean, I don't, it's like we don't, well, we do deliberately sometimes in Zen try to make ourselves tired. And if we sit a retreat, we're kind of deliberately making ourselves sore and achy. So I don't know. Like there's a place for recognizing these obstacles don't, they're not really obstacles to real zazen. Right. Thank you all. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas surround space and time. All honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, and everyone.
Happy Mother's Day.